The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So the topic tonight is equanimity. And this is the tenth of the series that we've been exploring on the paramis. The paramis are qualities of mind that are described to be supportive of our life on the spiritual path. And in Asian countries, it's really also understood to be the foundation of our practice in daily life. And so these qualities include generosity, ethics, renunciation, wisdom, energy, patience, truthfulness, determination, loving kindness, and equanimity. And so they are relevant for our meditation practice, and they are also relevant for our daily lives. Each of these, this list, in a way, each aspect, each part of the list is said to support the next. And it's said that the next one is said to help kind of purify the one before it, or perfect. The term parami means perfection, and that's where the name for this list comes from. So it's said that generosity supports ethics, and we can understand this. You know, generosity is a connection between people. It's a relational practice, generosity. And as we are in relationship with people, we are inspired to behave ethically with our fellow human beings. And so the practice of generosity begins to support the cultivation of ethics. And then in turn, as ethics is cultivated, it begins to perfect generosity, because one of the deepest forms of generosity is said to be giving safety to all beings through our ethical conduct. And so in this way, each of the paramis leads to the other and supports the previous one. And so the last one we talked about was loving kindness. And this supports, or metta, the Pali for loving kindness. And that includes not only the mind state of connection, caring, which is what loving kindness is, but also the flavors of love that are relatives of connection and caring, compassion and joy, a sympathetic joy. And these all of these three aspects of love are included in that parami, in that the parami that we talked about last time. And as we explore those qualities, as we explore the connection of experience with allowing kindness, caring, and we begin to see that as our heart meets struggle in the world, ooh, it resists that. Maybe contracts or resists or is afraid. It kind of backs off from that. And likewise, when our heart meets somebody else who's having a lot of good fortune in their life, sometimes our heart constricts about that too. It's like, why not me? How come I'm not having that? And so there's this relationship that we have as we explore the connectedness with other people, that sometimes there's resistance. There's a push-pull around what we experience as we explore opening our heart to our fellow human beings, and also to opening our heart to just what's happening in our own experience. We can also reflect on the quality of love, of compassion, of joy in relationship to our own experience, not just in relationship to other beings. And so this exploration of opening the heart begins to point in the direction of equanimity, which is a balanced mind that can sit in the middle of whatever is happening in the world and not be in this push-pull relationship, but be able to be stable, grounded, and not contracted around what's happening either. And so this is how love moves in the direction of equanimity. It encourages us. In fact, in order to fully develop love, we have to develop equanimity in the way that it was described, that I described around ethics, kind of perfecting generosity. As we cultivate balance of mind, it allows our heart to open even more. We can open to more of what we resist or want to hold on to or want to contract around. And so the equanimity supports our the flowering of love in our experience. The quality of equanimity itself is one of the words I often use for equanimity is balance of mind. It's a mind that stays on an even keel, isn't like pushed over one way or the other based on what's happening in our own experience or based on what's happening in the world. Some other words that relate to this. It's balance of mind of what's happening in our own experience. It's balance of mind around what other people do. Non-reactivity is another word that sometimes conveys a sense of equanimity, although non-reactivity also sometimes implies non-action, and equanimity does not imply non-action in my understanding. I'll talk about that more in a bit. But non-reactivity to whether experience is pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral, that is, again, staying balanced, not pulled off by whether there's pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral experience. Spaciousness is another word that's associated with equanimity. Ease, acceptance, allowing, these words also convey a flavor of equanimity. Joseph likes the word impartiality for equanimity, Joseph Goldstein. It's not indifference or apathy. In fact, I think the connection of equanimity with love points to the indifference and apathy is like a heart that is not connected. And equanimity is joined with those other qualities of love, of compassion, of joy. And it allows a balance with those. But it is not about so the word non-reactivity. We might be non-reactive if we were indifferent to something, but that's not equanimity. That's what might be called the equanimity of unknowing. Or we might be equanimous about something if we don't have information about it. That could be called the equanimity of unknowing. That's not, or the kind of the mind that isn't reactive because it doesn't know something. That's not this kind of the quality of the parami of equanimity. I think, in fact, that as the mind gets more balanced and can fully be allowing and open to what is happening in our experience in the world, that it actually feels more deeply. So in my own deepening of understanding around equanimity and the other qualities of love, I found that when my mind is really able to meet what's happening without resistance, I feel it even more fully. I feel the pain. I feel someone else's pain more fully, but I'm not constricted around it. So this, to me, brings part of how equanimity is not a passive emotion. It's not a passive quality. Because as we can more fully feel what's happening, we can more fully respond to what's happening. And our heart wants to respond when it meets suffering in the world, when it sees injustice in the world. It wants to respond. If there's constriction in the heart, there may also be a kind of a push to respond out of anger or frustration or confusion. And that, you know, things get done that way. You know, things do get done that way. And yet that movement brings along with it, it carries some baggage with it. It carries some personal baggage with it in that our actions are motivated from a place of constriction. And so we are deepening a pattern of constriction in our own minds. And it also, I think, often ripples out into the world when we act from that perspective. But I do want to be really clear in saying that the movement in the direction of equanimity is not a movement to non-action. I guess what I would say is that equanimity is a full acceptance that what has happened in the past has happened. It is unchangeable. It has happened. It's over. It's happened. And that what has happened in the past has a kind of a momentum. You know, things that happen in the world condition other things happening in the world. So there's a kind of momentum of that, what's happened in the past. But what's happened in the past has happened. And equanimity is kind of around recognizing, yep, that has happened. It's not denying. It's not saying that didn't happen. It's not resisting that it happened, because it happened. Also, it's acknowledging that what's happening in this moment, what's already happening in this moment, is already happening. What equanimity brings in the present moment is a balance of mind to what is happening in the present moment, a balance of mind about what has happened in the past, which creates conditions for wisdom, for the heart of love and compassion to have the say or have the impetus towards what our steps will be based on what has happened and what is. We know, based on what has happened, that there is a direction. And it may well be that based on what we are understanding the flow of history to be, that we want to take some action to change the course, change the direction. This is something that a heart of equanimity may well do. Because if the heart sees that a direction is heading towards suffering for oneself or others, that heart, in the moment of knowing that, is going to, the heart of wisdom will step in and point the heart in another way, point action in another direction. So equanimity is not passive. It allows us, and it's not indifferent, it allows us to feel so fully what is happening and allows us to respond with more clarity without having filters of our own reactivity in the way. We can more clearly see how to respond to what is out there, or how to respond to what is happening for ourselves. And that's one piece of the equanimity, that it is an equanimity about what has come to be, things that have arisen, that things have come to be, they have come to be, and it is acknowledging that. What is here is here. This is what is arising in this moment. It's kind of a statement of that, not a statement, but a being acknowledgement of that. The second part of equanimity is that as we act from that place, the results of that may not be what we'd like them to be. There's so many conditions out in the world that influence what unfolds. We can do what we can do in the best way that we can do it and keep trying. It may not have the impact that we hope it has. And yet with equanimity, we also don't give up. We can continue to make that effort, have that resolve. Some of the other paramis have the patience to keep going, have the resolve to keep trying, because we have the heart of love that recognizes maybe this is not right, this is not just. And the heart of equanimity that can hold the vast confusion of 7 billion people on this planet and what that has resulted in. And yet, not giving up. Making the actions that feel resonant with the love, the compassion that we have in our hearts. So equanimity is it's at the end of the list of the paramis, and it's actually at the end of several lists in the Buddhist teaching. It's at the end of the four Brahmaviharas, the four divine abidings, which we've just been talking about: love, compassion, sympathetic joy, equanimity. It's the last of the seven factors of awakening. It's the last of the paramis. It's understood to be the most refined of the states, the factors that contribute to concentration. It's the last factor of concentration to arise. So it is in this position partly because it is not easy. It takes a lot of support for us to find our way to equanimity, to begin to cultivate equanimity. We begin the cultivation of equanimity when we first step into a spiritual practice. Our first attempt to meditate, actually we are cultivating, or it is a practice of cultivating equanimity. As we sit down and try to pay attention to a breath or two and see our mind wander, recognizing, okay, that's what minds do. Can I come back to, can I not react to the fact that the mind wanders? Can I just recognize that's what has happened and start again? That's an equanimity practice. So in the midst of the whatever meditation practice you are doing, you are practicing and cultivating equanimity. And it can be kind of emphasized a little bit by recognizing, oh, right, this is an equanimity practice. Of course the mind's going to wander. Oh, what's my relationship to the mind as it returns from wandering? Oh, there's some frustration. Okay, that's a sign of the equanimity hasn't fully developed. And boy, we all have a long way to go before our equanimity is fully developed. And so this is a lot of our practice, especially in our mindfulness practice. It's a lot of our practice to watch what's happening, notice what's going on, and see if we can hold it with some degree of balance. I mean, the instructions for mindfulness are really instructions to cultivate equanimity. as we give the instructions for mindfulness practice, we say, whatever's arising, see if it can be allowed. Can it be allowed? Allowing being a kind of a word that's like equanimity. So can the arising of an uncomfortable sensation in the body be allowed? Can it be met with a sense of, oh, that can be seen too? Can an emotion that's arising, like confusion or fear, can that be allowed? So that instruction is basically an equanimity instruction. Can we move in that direction? And yet what we often see in our meditation is that we can't allow everything. We do react to things. We're frustrated by things. We don't like things. We don't want something to continue. We want to hold on to something else. This push-pull that is the reactivity that is not the balance of mind. And so one of the main ways actually to cultivate equanimity is to notice where we are not equanimous. Maybe that sounds like a little bit of a paradox, but we do, there is a possibility of beginning to move in the direction of a balanced mind by seeing, can I be okay that the mind is not balanced right now? So a pain in the knee arises and frustration arises. Okay, frustration. There's if you can recognize the frustration when so here's where frustration is kind of not being held with equanimity. It's like there's the pain in the knee and the mind is frustrated and we are bought into that frustration. We think the knee pain is a problem, we think we need to move, we think we need to fix it, we think we can't meditate, we have all kinds of views and opinions and reactions about the knee pain. We are frustrated. Frustration is our relationship to the world in that moment. What's possible in mindfulness practice is to step back and recognize what's happening right now is there's knee pain. And there's frustration. Frustration is happening right now. What is the experience of being frustrated? So it's taking a step back that allows us to, I would use the word, be with frustration rather than be frustrated. There's a vast difference between those two. It's possible to be mindful of reactive emotions. Recognizing, oh, this is what it's like for a human being to feel frustrated. This is what it's like for a human being to feel wanting or anger or confusion, whatever reactivity it is. So that step back to be with the reactivity, that puts us in the terrain of being balanced around reactivity. And so we are at that point cultivating some measure of equanimity that we can be with a reaction rather than being that, being frustrated or being angry. There's a huge difference between those two. A key to this, I mean, this, and so studying reactivity like this is a key way to begin to cultivate equanimity. We can do this on the cushion all the time. You know, this if we're noticing a reactivity to the wandering mind in that moment. Oh, the mind was wandering. Frustration is happening around the mind. Can I know frustration? So we can just see if we can keep stepping back to the place where we can be with what's happening. We have to do this over and over and over again. There are times when we can meet our reactive emotions, and it's like we understand when we can meet them, when there's that moment of being with frustration instead of being frustrated, and it's like, wow, this is actually kind of interesting. It's actually not that hard to, it's not that uncomfortable to just know this experience of the constriction of the stomach and the tightness of the throat and the kind of tightness in the mind. I can know that. The stronger the capacity gets for being able to know what's happening, the more there's a kind of a taste of what equanimity is in that moment, a taste of the non-reactivity, and a taste of the difference. We really, in that moment, understand the difference between being caught in something and being able to step back and observe it with a balanced mind. And in seeing that difference, we feel the benefit of equanimity. It often has a sense of a creation of space around the difficulty, so that we're not like just embedded in the midst of it. It feels like we have some room to maneuver. We have a sense of, oh, I can work with this. This is okay. And as we actually sit with something like that, as our mind can be equanimous about a reactive emotion, one of the things we start to see happen as that equanimity gets stronger around being with a difficult reactive state is that the reactivity begins to diminish as we're watching it. We may even see it disappear. And then we're in a completely new space with a mind that is present with what's happening and a sense of balance. So a key around the reactivity, as we study reactivity in service of cultivating equanimity, is not judging that our minds are doing this. Of course our minds do these things. We've been doing it for years. You know, when I first started practicing, my mind was... Well, the reason I started practicing was because anger was so big in my life that it created, you know, I was just non-functional at times. And, you know, just that direction of the mind headed that way, it would go there. With the least little push, it would go to anger. So that was the direction the mind was going, you know, over and over. It was headed there. So it was, of course, when I started to meditate, it wasn't that, oh, everything was wonderful. Of course anger arose. Of course I got to watch it. I got to watch it in my meditation. I got to watch it in my daily life over and over and over again. There may be times when we can see it with a balance. Conditions vary over the course of our lives, of our practice. There are times when we may be able to watch something challenging or be with a reactive emotion and watch it vanish, watch it disappear. And then another day, we really struggle with that same reactive emotion. Something in our, you know, something else is going on in our system, or something else is going on in our world that has created stress in our minds that makes it harder for us to meet that in that day. It's not a mistake that sometimes we can meet challenging reactive situations and other times we can't. It's not a mistake. It's just the nature of our minds. And so we have to continue to keep going, and to not judge the fact that it happens. Of course it happens. Of course. If you can have that of course attitude for me was so huge, so helpful in learning how to navigate my mind, learning how to begin to be more curious about my mind instead of thinking I should be able to make it go from here to here. It's like we can kind of begin to usher our mind in a direction through this practice. We can begin to steer it in a direction. But we cannot, even having seen, for instance, the pain and the unhelpfulness of a reactive emotion. Sometimes we see it so clearly. I remember the first time I really saw my anger as a human experience. Or maybe it wasn't the first time, but just one time I saw it really as a human experience. And I recognized, oh my gosh, this hurts me. This is painful to be angry. I had missed that because I was so focused on what I thought was going to be the, I thought that the person I was angry at was going to be miserable because I was angry at them. And that's what I was focused on. I was focused on trying to make them miserable by my anger. I was aided in this study by the fact that the person I was angry with was 7,000 miles away. I was in the Peace Corps at the time. And pretty clear, I was on an island in the middle of the South Pacific, and pretty clear that that person was not feeling my anger. And yet I was miserable. So I began to understand in that moment, oh, this hurts. This is not a direction that my being benefits from. And so even seeing that, you know, seeing that in that moment, there's a kind of an understanding or a release that's supported by that kind of recognition. But that didn't mean that I knew that the next day when anger arose again. Like, my mind bought into that same story yet again. It's like, oh, kind of get back at that person. It's a little quicker to see it, perhaps, the next time. But still, there are times when it's an ebb and flow. And so not judging that these things happen. I think sometimes what happens with our reactivity, we've kind of, you know, we're conditioned beings. When we practice something a lot, we do something a lot, our mind engages in something a lot, it tends to strengthen that direction. And so, as I said for myself, anger was a direction my mind really kind of headed in. And there's a kind of almost a gravitational pull in that direction. Something happens, and there's even, I think, support for this in the brain science. You know, it's like, when a particular pattern is reinforced over and over again, it's like the neurons, in a very non-judgmental way, the neurons, you know, are doing their thing, and they're like, this one must be important. We better shore this one up. They'll do that for anger as well as for love. Whatever we do over and over again gets shored up in our minds. And so there's that kind of gravitational pull in that direction, things we have cultivated over and over again in our lives. We all have familiar and favorite reactivities. And those are the ones we really need to take care with and to be curious about. Can I step back and have that perspective of being with rather than being that reactivity? In the stepping back, I don't know how it works in the brain. Maybe Rick Hansen knows, but in that stepping back, in that being with, somehow it is not reinforcing that pattern. It's not shoring up that pattern again. In fact, what it seems to do is it helps to weaken it. Partly because we get the feedback that it's not so helpful. We get the feedback that it's painful. So the practice of equanimity, you know, it's can I hang out with this emotion rather than buying into it and acting on it, strengthening it, reinforcing it? Can I just be with it? watch it vanish. Maybe, if we're lucky, watch it vanish this time. That allows some of the neurons to rewire. Our minds, our brains are plastic in that way. And what happens too is as we cultivate and strengthen that equanimity, and we're cultivating and strengthening the allowing kind perspective, we are strengthening those patterns in the mind. We're strengthening equanimity. We're strengthening love. We're strengthening compassion in our minds. And so slowly, over time, the gravitational pull towards those reactive states gets weaker. And the gravitational pull towards equanimity, towards love, towards compassion, towards patience, gets stronger. You don't have to believe me about this. But you do have to practice. I'm saying this to hopefully inspire the wish or the encouragement. It's an encouragement to be curious about this perspective of being with rather than being engaged in our reactivity. In the very first few months of my practice, it became clear to me how helpful that perspective was. It actually didn't take very long for me to recognize, wow, this actually works. Oh my gosh, you know, this is actually helping me. You know, in those first few months of being curious about my anger, and I did this in my daily life, so this was a daily life equanimity practice for me. The paramis being an equanimity, a daily life practice, can be a daily life practice. Each time I noticed my anger, I was committed to watching it from that perspective. And very soon, over the course of a few months, I began recognizing I was no longer made non-functional by my anger. It still came and went, but I could redirect the course of the mind much more quickly. It's like, oh yeah, let that go. So that's another part of the equanimity practice. The mindfulness practice, the pure mindfulness practice, is one form of the work of equanimity. Another may be recognizing at times, wow, the mind is really caught by that. Caught, pulled in that direction. And I see, boy, that's not going to turn out well. So let me actually change the channel. Let me put my attention on something else. So for instance, with that situation with anger for me, those thoughts of anger were generated because I was thinking about the person I was angry with. And so I could choose to put some other thoughts in my mind. Okay, woo, wow, I'm headed in that direction. I'm sitting in front of my computer. Let me think about what I'm doing on the computer. So that it took my attention away from the thing that was creating the anger and moving it to another direction. So this is another piece that supports equanimity, because we see we can make that shift sometimes. We can do that. And it allows, in another way, the mind to not engage in those reactive patterns, to begin to let them go. So reactivity is what we could call the far enemy of equanimity. You're not going to mistake reactivity for equanimity. The near enemy of equanimity are states like indifference, apathy, a state of just not caring, One of my dear friends, in beginning to touch into equanimity in her practice, began to recognize this difference between apathy and equanimity. She said, I noticed in my mind, if the mind was saying something like, well, I don't care, that wasn't equanimity. That was a subtle kind of aversion almost. It's like, I don't care. He said that the difference in equanimity and so something's happening, you go, okay, well, I don't care about that, you know. So that may not be true equanimity. In her own mind, she said, when her mind was more balanced, it was more that her mind would say something like, well, I don't mind that. So this is at a subtler level, beginning to notice a subtler kinds of not really being present and balanced with what is. Indifference and apathy are forms of subtle rejection of what's here. And so beginning to get familiar with that difference. And for me, when my friend mentioned that, that was helpful for me. I don't care versus I don't mind that. Is the mind saying, oh yeah, I don't care? Or can it really move in the direction of, yeah, okay, I don't mind that. That's what is. That is what is. There's a lot of times too, especially in our daily lives, I think, where we know we're reactive, we know we're being reactive, and there's not much we can do about it, or there's, we're kind of caught in that gravitational pull of that reactivity. I would say in some ways, this came to me as I was thinking about this topic this afternoon, that anytime the mind is reactive to something, anytime that there is reactivity in the mind, it means that the mind is resisting some kind of truth. Probably one of the core expressions of, it's impermanent and we don't want it to be impermanent. It's unreliable. We don't want it to be unreliable. Or it's out of control and we don't want it to be out of control. For me, this last one is probably one of the main ones where equanimity gets lost. If I find there's reactivity in the mind, what truth is being resisted? Oh, it's out of control. It's out of control. I don't have control over this situation. That's why there is reactivity. So sometimes in our daily lives, we might be able to check in. So what is the truth that's being resisted here? What's being resisted? Impermanent, unreliable, out of control is a good three-prong check. Is it something impermanent? Is that something unreliable? Is it something out of control? What truth is being resisted? What is being resisted? And then seeing what's being resisted. This is another practice that we can bring into daily life, is using wisdom, dropping wisdom into our system. Just reminding ourselves, oh, right, this is impermanent. Oh, this is out of control. This is just the way it is. This is nature. This is what is happening. Now, that, again, is not to stop us from acting, but to hopefully help shift the dynamic from acting out of that tight, constricted, reactive mind to being able to act from a more spacious mind. And so we can use wisdom, reflections to help us, especially in our daily life. Actually use thought in our practice, reminding ourselves, right, this is impermanent, this is unreliable. There's also often, I think, reactivity around the actions of other people, our feeling of the actions of other people being out of our control. And, you know, this often happens with parents and children, the feeling of just like the skittishness of, having to watch your kids become teenagers and, you know, make their choices and, really uncomfortable. And so there is a practice of equanimity around other people. Not that you again are just going to let your teenage kids do whatever they want to do, but to see if there can be a heart that is spacious around it rather than reactive around it. So the practice of equanimity there is a reminder that we all have to make our own choices. Every being has to make their own choices. The reflection goes something like, you're the owner of your actions. Your happiness or unhappiness depends upon your own actions and choices, not upon my wishes for you. And so this is a practice especially useful for times when we see that somebody that we deeply love is suffering. They may be making choices that we see are choices that are leading to that suffering, and we wish we could tell them or make their choices for them, and we can't. We can suggest, we can encourage, but we cannot make their choices for them. And this is a reflection, an equanimity reflection that can support us. Just to bring that person to mind and just remind yourself. Sometimes other words for this are something like, I love you and I can't make your choices for you. You have to live your own life. You have to live your own journey. And so I hope this exploration of equanimity has conveyed both the power of the quality. It's a very powerful quality in our mind. It allows us to meet what's happening and allows us to also act with wisdom. It's a powerful quality. It's not a dull, indifferent quality. Sometimes when people hear about non-reactivity or, you know, hear about, you know, not being pushed and pulled, they somehow think, well, that would not be a very interesting place to be. You know, well, I don't know that I want to go there. Why would I want to not be reactive? Well, it's not a dull place to be when there's that balance of mind. In fact, what my experience, those times when I've touched it strongly, is it's very fresh. It's very alive. It's very three-dimensional. And there's a huge, it's like the transparency of the system to feel the world without constricting. It's not a dull place. It's a powerful, beautiful emotion. Can be called an emotion. I think of the four Brahma Viharas, these last two paramis, love and equanimity, as being the emotional map of the heart that is free. Love, compassion, joy, equanimity. The heart that is connected to the world meets the world It's connected. That's love. That's metta. When it meets suffering, that's compassion. The heart resonates with suffering, with compassion. When it meets success, when it meets joy, it resonates with joy. And it holds it all with balance. And so, that's all we have time for. Thank you for your attention.